The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Remember that trust, like love, grows in small moments, in promises kept and confidences held, in boundaries respected and amends made, in showing up again and again. May we be brave enough to risk trust, patient enough to build it slowly, and gentle with ourselves and others when it breaks. Each Sunday, we come together to risk trust by being together. We take the small moments of 1 hour a week to grow our trust for each other and for our faith community. It takes time, and it's a slow process, this building of trust, this creation of a beloved community. I'm the Reverend Andrew L. Weber, and I'm here to walk this long path with you. The path of trust, one might say, is not toward a final destination. With one person, you can get to a place of very deep reliance, deep certainty. With a group of people, that reliance and certainty is ever shifting, changing, changed, sustained. It is our task. Our task as strangers, as friends, as acquaintances, as allies, our task is to venture into the unknown and the difficult and be patient with each other. So come, let us be gentle with ourselves and with each other. Come, let us worship together and risk the trust of religious community. We start our worship services with a physical and symbolic reminder to bring our best selves to this time and place. Each Sunday morning and many committee meetings begin with the lighting of a chalice. I've asked Sherry to come forward as the chair of our membership committee. And she's out in the lobby. That's okay. This flame, if you're new to our community, you'll see, like, we're pretty laid back, and you're fine. And we will make mistakes and errors because we're all about being human in ourselves. Perfect. You're perfect, Sherry. Thank you. This flame holds within it the hope of renewal, a lantern of justice, a challenge of relationship. And as this beacon is lit, let us listen to these words by Reverend Julianne Lepp. We light this chalice with hope, a sturdy flame we nurture in these difficult times. We light this chalice with the heart of compassion for a nation divided by politics and strife. We light this chalice knowing that it will take all of us to repair the world we live in. May we find rest, compassion, and the hope that we need to nurture ourselves and each other. May this sturdy light remind us of the people we can be and the difference we can make in the world together. At Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, we kindle a second flame each week, one which reminds us of our hope for peace in the world and reminds us for that hope and that peace to start here in our hearts. Please respond with the text on the screen. May peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Thank you, Sherry. Our opening hymn we have sung before, but not in this exact manner. The lyrics will be on this screen, as they usually are, but this hymn will be presented as a round. Yeah, right? I know, I get excited about this, and I know some of you are like, yeah, round, and some of you are like, oh my gosh, Andrew, come on. If you want a hymnal for reference, you can grab one at the entrance to the sanctuary. And a reminder, today we're using both hymnals. Yeah, right? Not only trying something new, but the teal and the gray hymnal. So at any time, you can get up and grab a hymnal if you want. Our gathering hymn is 118, Come, Come, Whoever You Are, which is based on a poem by Rumi. And we've sung this before, but his writing includes a line which is not in our hymnal. And that line is, though you've broken your vows 1,000 times, the version of the song we're going to hear has that repeated over and over. So whether you want to join in the lyrics in the gray hymnal, or though you've broken your vows 1,000 times, or switch back and forth, I commend that to you. So please rise in body or in spirit for this song of radical welcome and greeting. I really like that hymn, that poem, and also I really like the repetition because sometimes we need to hear that. It's like, come, come yet again. If you've broken your vows 1,000 times still, come, come. Today we celebrate the change of bringing new members officially into this congregation. And so I'm going to give you a little introduction. Because why is this important? Why does signing a book make any difference, right? If I was just saying that every person has an impact, if I was just saying that everyone here is important, and even if this is your first time, even if I have no idea who you are, you create this community, then why does signing a book make a difference? What's the impact there? Well, let me share two important sort of reasons of membership. First, becoming a member of Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship makes visible your commitment to Unitarian Universalism and to this congregation specifically. Membership sends a powerful message of commitment in a low commitment culture. It says, I am committed to this group of people and they are committed to me. That's one thing. Second, membership keeps us accountable to one another. It gives us the opportunity to make and keep promises. We are joined by a covenant of action to one another, a way that we can lovingly hold each other and ourselves accountable. And I'm going to be talking more about accountability later today. So, makes a visible commitment and provides accountability. Now, as we have our new member ceremony, I'm going to speak briefly about when membership starts. Membership does not start when you first attend a service. Membership does not begin when you sign the book, nor when you recognized formally. Membership truly begins when you are disappointed in the community and you return. Membership begins when you've disappointed and you still choose to come back. You have already created this community, all of you. You who have attended for decades, you who only attend online, you who stopped in just today looking for healing or solace or question, you and who you are have created this community. Thank you. Let us now witness to those who have chosen to formally enter this community as members. Will the membership team please come forward? Do you want another microphone here too?
Good morning. My name is Alex Dooley, and I'm here with Susan Hare and the other members of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist membership team to officially induct and welcome the newest members of our faith community.
Okay, did you finish this part? Each member of our team accepts a responsibility to encourage people to learn more about Unitarian Universalism and to consider if Thomas Paine is a place and faith community they would like to join.
When folks such as you decide to become members, that responsibility becomes a joy. We would like to invite the new members to come forward and line up from my right facing the congregation. Please hold your acknowledgement and applause until the ceremony is complete.
I will be reading your name so you'll know when to come up. Okay, Rick Cole. Ken Eng. Adam Hoffman. Laura DiFrancesco. Elise Fisher. Jeff Fisher. Rob Keeley. Connie Keeley. Brian Strong. Cindy Westfall. Lillian Jennings. Terry Newfoglies. And that is all of our members. Woo!
Okay. We welcome you as new members of our community. You have come to worship, play, work, and grow with us. Ours is a community of spiritual seekers where each person is encouraged to bring their faith and share with others. I invite you to join us in our religious seeking and social justice action.
Where can I stand when I can see you and everyone else? You have already signed the membership book. This morning, you're here to celebrate and celebrate that commitment in worship. In this gathering, we lift up our voices in song, in shared song. We bring ourselves before the holy in silence and in speech. We search together for meaning and truth in life, and we share in the joys and sorrows of our lives. Joining Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship means being part of this community, means speaking out about the future of our congregation. It means offering and receiving the gifts of the Spirit, supporting others in return, and promoting a just and compassionate world. If you will join us in this essential work, say, we will. Will the current members of the congregation please rise in body or in spirit and respond with the words printed on the screen? We receive you. Will everyone please rise in body or in spirit and respond with the words printed on the screen? And maybe if you can part just a little bit. Yeah, right there. It's everyone.
On this special day, we celebrate your commitment to this sacred community.
Welcome. Thank you. You may be seated, and we're going to hand out certificates and pins for you.
That when you come back after you don't like what you're saying, I got touched with so quickly. Because it happened several times. I'm like, I'm going back.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Brilliant. I thought you were going to say it's when you first set up coffee hour or when you like something like that. Like,
this faith community is ever changing. For those who have just been recognized, we create a new community with those who have just come here for the first time. This is the truism that our separate fires will kindle one flame. So as our newest members take their seats, let us rise in body or in spirit for hymn number 347, Gather the Spirit. I do have a story this morning. It's from The Little Prince. It's a longer book, so if you're interested, read the whole book. This is just an excerpt. If you want to come forward, this is for any age. If you want to come forward, you may. The pictures will be on the screen, but also have the book here. And if you are like, I can't see Andrew. It's like, there are seats. Anyone can come forward. So come on up, and I'll just sit down and read here. It's by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, and I do not know French, so excuse me for that. Hey. The Little Prince. It was then that the fox appeared. Good morning, said the fox. Good morning, the little prince answered politely, though when he turned around, he saw nothing. I am here, the voice said, under the apple tree. Who are you, the little prince asked. You're very pretty. I'm a fox, the fox said. Come and play with me, the little prince proposed. I'm feeling so sad. I can't play with you, the fox said. I'm not tamed. Ah, excuse me, said the little prince, but upon reflection, he asked, what does tamed mean? You're not from around here, the fox said. What are you looking for? I'm looking for people, said the little prince. What does tamed mean? People, said the fox, have guns and they hunt. It's quite troublesome. And they also raise chickens. That's the only interesting thing about them. Are you looking for chickens? No, said the little prince. I'm looking for friends. What does tamed mean? It's something that's been too often neglected. It means to create ties. To create ties? That's right, the fox said. For me, you're only a little boy, just like 100,000 other little boys, and I have no need of you. And you have no need of me either. For you, I'm only a fox like 100,000 other foxes. But if you tame me, we'll need each other. You'll be the only boy in the world for me. I'll be the only fox in the world for you. I'm beginning to understand, the little prince said. The only things you learn are the things you tame, said the fox. People haven't time to learn anything. They buy things ready-made in stores. But since there are no stores where you can find friends, people no longer have friends. If you want a friend, tame me. What do I have to do? Asked the little prince. You have to be very patient, the fox answered. First, you'll sit down a little ways away from me over there in the grass. I'll watch you out of the corner of my eye, and you won't say anything. Language is the source of misunderstanding. But day by day, you'll be able to sit closer. And time passed, and the little prince tamed the fox. And he went back to the fox when he was departing. Goodbye, he said. Goodbye, said the fox. Here is my secret. It's quite simple. One sees clearly only with the heart. Anything essential is invisible to the eyes. Anything essential is invisible to the eyes, the little prince repeated in order to remember. It's the time you spent on your rose that makes your rose so important. It's the time I spent on my rose, the little prince repeated in order to remember. People have forgotten this truth, the fox said, but you mustn't forget it. You become responsible forever for what you've tamed. And there ends our reading about friendship and taming. Thank you for coming up. We often have a hymn, a recessional hymn for the children to go to their RE classrooms. I'm just switching up everything today. It's a different hymn today. So I encourage you to remain seated, rising only in spirit, and join with me in Make Channels for the Streams of Love, which is 299.
Make channels for the streams of love where they may broadly run, and love as overflowing streams to fill them, everyone.
As many of you know, I'm part of a local group of mainly Christian ministers in the Collegeville area who come together for fellowship and support for one another. And during the Christian season of Lent, which is right now, we swap pulpits. Veritable pulpits. We swap pulpits for weekly services. Wednesday of this week, we hosted the service, and Reverend Betty Wright Riggins from Ursinus College came and preached here. And last week, I had the honor and the challenge of preaching at St. James Episcopal Church. And when I go to different faith communities, I usually start with an introduction of Unitarian Universalism. One part warning and one part proselytizing, right? I say, this is my religious background. So be forewarned that you might not agree with what I have to say, along with your beliefs and your ideas and your questions and your doubts are important and valuable and welcome. And the more I preach, the more I realize that an introduction like this doesn't just have to happen in places other than where I am. It could actually benefit almost every service I do of a little introduction, a little caveat here. So here's my introduction for you today. Unitarian Universalism is a weird religion. we're all at a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, whether we grew up in the faith, whether we came to it and have been here for years, whether we just stepped in. So we all have some idea of what Unitarian Universalism is, or whether it's just what I've been saying this morning, we're like, I have a glimpse of what he's talking about. Now, here's the thing. I come with my personal understanding. You come with your own experiences. They come with their experiences, which is okay and good, but it leaves us with just as many ideas about Unitarian Universalism as there are people in the room, if not more, right? So therein lies the weirdness of Unitarian Universalism in its variety. Last month, I led a world religions class, and every time I came to Unitarian Universalism, there was no specific answer. Right? So I talked about the views of God of different faiths, and then for Unitarian Universalists, I said, well, it's up to the individual. Okay, yeah. The beliefs about what happens after death. And I was like, for Unitarian Universalists, well, it's up to the individual, really. And then it's like, meaning of life? Yeah, you guessed it. Okay. Source of authority? It's the same. It's varied, and it's up to the individual. And so with every single theological topic, right? That's the beauty, the challenge of our faith. We are a community which does not have institutional agreement on theological beliefs. We join in the searching. There has to be more than that, right? We could join in the searching at a library. Right, we could just go search in a library together. So what makes this a faith fellowship? What makes this a beloved community? Right? What's the difference between a library and a Unitarian Universalist congregation? This morning, we welcomed new members, and many of us haven't officially signed the membership book. So what does entering in this community as members, as friends, as visitors mean? What does it require of somebody? What does it mean to be a Unitarian Universalist, if not an agreement of some belief, right? I mean, that's the main criterion for most religions. Agree on this belief statement, and then you're part of our group. For there is something. I mean, there's something that we do here. And what this faith requires of us, of each of us, is a promise of relationship. A promise that we will be supportive, respectful of each other, even when we disagree. Especially when we disagree, we have a covenant that we value ourselves, we value our differences, and we value each other. We come together not because of shared beliefs, but because of shared agreements of action. And you may have heard this term before, that Unitarian Universalism is a covenantal faith, a religion based on agreeing to act in a certain way. Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship has a covenant of good relations with that title, which stands as a promise about how we are going to be together in community. We're able to join together in our variety of theological beliefs because we agree to be kind with one another, right? I mean, that's it. We don't require you to accept a certain creed. We don't say you have to believe in God or you have to not mention God at all. We do say you have to be kind to one another. We are here because we agree on something. We agree that we're going to play nice with one another. We agree to be bound by our promise of good relations. As the early 19th century Unitarian minister Jose Ballou penned, if we agree on love, there is no disagreement that can do us any injury. That's challenging. But there's actually more to our coming together than agreement of action. We have a higher purpose. And some of you may be like, yeah, where is he going with this one, right? Thomas Paine's mission statement is that we are welcoming and nurturing community dedicated to inspiring spiritual growth and fellowship for adults and children, caring for our environment, promoting social justice and equality in the larger community. So not only do we agree to be kind, but there's a higher purpose for this gathering, for personal and for communal betterment. That's my very sort of abbreviated, be kind, grow personally and communally. That's it. That's why we're here. And if we're looking to be better people, if we're looking to be better communities, right, then we're asking for growth and change. That's just a given. If you want to be better, you're going to have to grow and change. And for me, this means focus on accountability. Oh, yeah, there it comes again. The accountability in having our beliefs reflected back to us and the accountability of hearing when we make mistakes. Is there two pieces of growth here that I'm seeing? One is a somewhat soft accountability, like the Sunday service classes where we engage in theological discussion. We think about how we might live out our beliefs. Okay, there's some accountability there. I talk to you. I say, yeah, this is how we live in the world. You're like, oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. Now, the second instance of growth, maybe a hard accountability, I'm terming these, is what happens when we make a mistake, when we don't live up to our covenant of good relations, when we do something that's outside of that be kind calling. Here's an example I'll briefly share. I've shared it before. A congregation I served prior, there was a man named Bill. He was a very long-term friend. He helped out. He was always there for years. He did odd jobs around the building. He was always there when he was needed, but he was always there when he was not needed too. Yeah, right? He would show up in youth-only areas. He would say things inappropriate or offensive to others and especially to women. And so I sat down with Bill and I talked with him about like covenant of relations, like how we live with each other, how we're in community, how he might be a little bit offensive to other people. And everything seemed fine. He was like, okay, yeah. But over the next few years, there were multiple complaints that kept coming up about Bill. And so I would sit down with Bill, and if the person was comfortable, the person who complained, and we would talk about what happened and what may change. And Bill, in turn, continually responded that that's just how he was. And we, as Unitarian Universalists, were supposed to accept everyone. Right? Not so fast, right? After a few complaints, I involved the lay leadership of the congregation, and the leadership came to the conclusion that Bill was able to stay in the community, but only if certain criteria were met. One limitation he had was always have an adult with him at all times when he was at congregational events or in the building, have a sort of accountability partner. He was unable or unwilling to agree to these restrictions, and so he was asked to leave the community. That was, in my mind, hard accountability. That was an act of care. The soft accountability is me right now telling you about this, me sharing the example. It's not easy to do this work, but this is where the faith holds us accountable and pushes us to hold others accountable. A faith tells us to hold, do this hard, hard work that when we mess up, we're going to mess up. You will mess up. That we come back together. That we try again to act in love. Our faith compels us to do the hard work. Like, when does membership start, right? That when someone else messes up, because they will, that we come together again. And we try to act once more in love. We maintain clear and open communication. We come back again and again to our promise of beloved community, our promise of right relations. And sitting down with Bill and the persons who made complaints was not I can tell you, like, that is not what I signed up for. And I was like, I want to be a minister. I want to sit down with people who have really difficult times with each other. No, that's hard. But that had to be done. And that was accountability with care. It was offering Bill a way forward in community was not a path everyone wanted to take. Some people said, he's out. He's done too much. Get him out of here. But that was loving accountability to say, there is a path forward, Bill, and this is what we need from you. And then finally saying, if you're not willing to accept this, you need to go. It was extremely painful. But it had to be done. The leadership showed Bill the love of accountability and showed the congregation the love of safety. That's the hard work of covenant, the hard work of love, the hard work of accountability. Right? These communities we have, our faith communities are based on love, are based on inclusivity, but we are not welcoming to all people. That is not what we are about. And that can be hard for us to hear. I know for me, when I think about that, I'm like, I thought our whole thing was being welcoming and open. Yes. But we are not welcoming to all people. We are not welcoming to those who are not willing to live into our covenant of relationship of saying, you have to be kind. Right? And that's okay, because we keep coming back to our actions. If someone is not willing to forgive, is not willing to act in love, then we may have to part ways. Should Bill have been asked to leave the congregation? I'm not saying what happened was correct or wrong. I'm just saying what happened. It's a very fine line between being radically open, radically inclusive, radically loving, and sustaining a community of love, of safety and care. Where do we draw that line? And I actually want to both generalize and personalize this message, both at the same time. It's not just in our community of faith in which accountability is an expression of love. There are others from whom we expect loving accountability. A therapist, a fitness trainer, romantic partner, financial planner, really anyone who's expected to help us or hired by us to support us in being a better person, right? If I go to the therapist and every time I go to the therapist says, you're doing great, you're doing wonderful, that's no help to me except a pat on the back. I'm not going to grow as a person. A fitness trainer who doesn't correct my form or doesn't provide challenge is either going to hurt me or not help me improve. A romantic partner who does not tell me when I have messed up isn't living in love. A financial planner who doesn't correct a bad investment, your investment won't grow, right? I mean, there are many, many more examples we could think of where accountability and doing the difficult truth-telling of care is preferred to sort of maybe automatic or maybe unwarranted praise. Don't just tell me everything's going okay if it's not. And it's tough, though, to get to this point, to get to the place in a relationship where accountability can be offered and received, right? What if accountability is brought up too soon? That is prior to this foundation of understanding, prior to a foundation of trust. I mean, imagine the first time I came to Thomas Paine. If I started talking about something I thought you were doing wrong, it's like, this is not how you should be doing it. I don't know, something like, these seats aren't right, or this layout isn't right, or that's not right. Without having any relationship or understanding, you'd probably write me off and you probably wouldn't renew my contract. You're like, he doesn't get us. He's just pushing us. He doesn't understand. Or imagine a financial planner who gives advice without knowing my debt amount or my plans for retirement. Or a fitness trainer who doesn't know about a past injury. I was talking with a friend this morning and she had a supervisor who did her renewal, but didn't understand how she did her work. Going too fast to accountability can have disastrous results. You need a basis first. And I have an example here. This is another example. I'm part of a Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. So I have my interfaith ministers, and these are all Unitarian Universalist ministers. And there's an area group, it's a pretty large geographic group, and there may be 30 of us who gather regularly. And we decided, a couple years ago, we decided to read a book about Unitarian Universalists of Color. It's called Centering, Navigating Race, Authenticity, and Power in Ministry. And we even set up accountability partners, with pairs making commitments to each other about how much they were going to read, what they were going to preach on or study about and look at. Okay? So this is great. This is wonderful. Now, the problem was, and this is me in hindsight looking at it, the problem was I don't think our group had a strong enough foundation of trust when we entered into this. We tried to go too soon to that difficult accountability. Here's what happened in a broad swath. Most of the ministers of color read the book, engaged with it, talked about it, and talked with others about what they felt. They felt heard by the book, by the stories contained therein. Most of the white ministers didn't open the book, or maybe read a little bit and did nothing else. Now, in general, the white ministers felt burdened by the ministers of color. And the ministers of color felt ignored and devalued. Right? We were trying to get to a place of accountability, and we didn't have a foundation of trust. That was a painful time for us. And just as the fox says to the little prince that he can't play with him just yet, he's not tamed. They don't have enough trust. They don't have enough relationship to go into the more intimate level of playing together. We didn't have enough trust to go to that deeper level of talking about race and talking about power and ministry. And what a stark reality. We sort of proved much of what the book was that we weren't reading. Yeah. I mean, there are parallels to pushing too fast toward accountability and what happens when trust is broken. I mean, think about Bill. The leadership's trust of Bill was broken through his inability to follow a covenant of action. We began in trust, we moved forward with good intention, but came to a place where trust became frayed and damaged. So he, in turn, didn't trust the leadership, and so was not able to enter into that accountability we asked him for. Without that trust, there was no room for accountability, but to make the first steps. Oh, this is the hard part. Like, to make the first step, sometimes someone has to make a leap of faith, a leap of trust. Someone has to make the first move. Here's an example which maybe hits a little bit closer to home. I'm coming from far, and I'm coming right here now. In some smaller congregations, there's a general distrust of our national organization, the Unitarian Universalist Association, or the UUA. I know here that sometimes in some people have that distrust. I have very mixed feelings about the UUA, right, as an entity, and I've spoken with and heard from many of you about your misgivings. And mistrust of the UUA is not just at Thomas Paine. I've seen it elsewhere. It happens. And I think that this distrust stems from the same place. The UUA often jumps to places of accountability without having a foundation of trust. The leadership put out fair compensation guidelines for staff, like how much you should pay your ministers, your directors of religious education, without always knowing the financial situations of those smaller congregations, right? They hold us accountable in other ways by providing recommendations about responding to white privilege, by going through a process of bylaw changes, by hosting programs on how to be more welcoming. The organization provides so much guidance, but sometimes it feels faceless and institutional without this relationship. Like, I don't know, how are they telling me what to do? Why are they telling us what to do? They don't know us. Who are they? Right? What would that institutional guidance look like if first we had this level of trust, or if we had a relationship, a loving relationship with the UUA, which just sounds weird because it's an institution. So that's the problem. Like, where does that come from? How do you trust or have a deep relationship with an organization? Well, hold on. Aren't we an organization? Well, what a great question. How do you have a deep relationship or trust with an organization? That's a great question for us in this institution, right? And we have to remember that institutions are made up of individuals. It's a faceless thing, except it's a faceful thing, What's the opposite of faceless? I mean, it's a very personal. You are that institution. We are the institution. So, yes, our religion is based on covenant, on relationship. Our covenant must be one of accountability or it's empty. But first, trust. If we don't come with trust, there is no level of accountability that will feel loving. Trust is the basis from which deeper and more meaningful parts of relationship can stem. When we're starting a new relationship, when we're looking to mend injured ones, when we need to come from a place of trust. It's true in all relationships, in religious settings, with our therapists, with our beloveds, with our colleagues, pretty much anyone with whom we want a relationship. How do we build trust? How do we build that trust so we can get to loving accountability? Remember the little prince and the fox. Start slow and don't rush. You have to be very patient with small steps. And slowly we can build strong relationships of mutuality, of trust, of love, and hopefully maybe get to accountability, right? The reason for social hour, stay, chat. The reason for sharing our joys and concerns here on Sunday morning. The reason that we gather Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, right? The work you're doing behind the scenes is the holy work of relationship building. Some Sundays I come with like big, deep, and challenging topics for consideration. Today I'm bringing the very slow, very easy, still very difficult topic of trust building. When someone new enters this community, when someone new enters your life, when trust is broken or strained for those whom we have known for years and want to continue in relationship with, start slow and take care. We can get back to trust. We can always promote trust by listening to what the fox said. You have to be very patient. First, you'll sit a little ways away from me over there in the grass. I'll watch you out of the corner of my eye, and you won't say anything. Language is the source of misunderstandings. But day by day, you'll be able to sit a little bit closer. Amen. And blessed be. Please join with me in singing, Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire. It's number 34 in the hymnal, and you may rise in body or in spirit. And are freed.
Good morning. Cindy Westfall. I'm a member of the CARE committee, CARE team, and also a new member of this amazing fellowship. Thank you. This is our embodied faith, the fact that each week we set aside a special time to be vulnerable. And vulnerability comes from trust, right? We can't be vulnerable if we don't trust. It's hard to come up here in front of everybody. It makes us vulnerable, even just to come up here, but then again to share. But we know the importance of sharing, to bring forward the highs and lows which come pouring out of our lives and out of our hearts. And we know the importance of hearing from others' lives. If you feel so moved, I invite you to come forward and briefly share a sorrow or a joy. If you're online, please virtually or physically raise your hand and you will have an opportunity to share as well. Please start with your name. Thank you.
We will turn this back over to Andrew to bring our time of sharing to a close.
I guess when I get on a kick of doing new things, I get on a kick of doing new things. So our sung response today is going to be from the Teal Hymnal. It is 1037, We Begin Again in Love. And this is a call and response. And you may follow along in the Teal Hymnal or with the words on the screen. I'm going to try to speak as it's spoken on the video so that we feel like we're taking part of this. And then we will all sing together the response. And the response is, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. Please remain seated, rise in spirit for 1037. We begin again in love.
Ourselves and each other, we begin again in love.
Remaining silent in a single voice would have made a difference.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
Rigid and inaccessible.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time we have struck out in anger without just cause.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others,
we forgive ourselves and each other.
That set us apart and alone.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
For our losing sight of our unity.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
And subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in
thought I was finished there for a moment. That was amazing. Thank you. So some sadness, triumphs in sadness today in our reflections and matters of the heart. The sadness of Viola and what she did, but the triumph in how she's remembered, even if we think she's not. You know, the triumphs in our sadness every day and how we overcome is so important, and sharing it here is what we appreciate so much. I would like to take a moment just for us to close our eyes and hold the people that came up here and were vulnerable and hold them in the light. This is our nest of vulnerability. Breaths in and out. With love and care, and hold all of our speakers this morning in our love and light. Thank you.
You can tell when I put together a service because I put a lot of music in it. So we have our closing hymn number 318, We Would Be One. You may rise in body or in spirit, and the lyrics will be on the screen and in your hymnal, 318. Trust. We have trust that even when we extinguish these symbolic flames, that fire of commitment, of justice, of truth and faith will live on and burn brightly in our lives. Hear these words from Marilyn McIntyre on what to do in the darkness. Go slowly. Consent to it, but don't wallow in it. Know it as a place of germination and growth. Remember the light. Take an outstretched hand if you find one. Exercise unused senses. Find the path by walking it. Practice trust. Watch for dawn. Amen and blessed be.